Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Footbeer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Michael Stewart. Dr. Stu, how are we feeling, buddy?
I was about to say, you didn't call me Dr. Michael Stewart today. We're going to have to fix that.
We got
there. I worked too hard. Okay. No, I'm feeling good, James. Thank you. I'm happy it's Friday, and we're starting to put the pedal to the metal right now. We need to get through these divisions before the year starts. We only got a couple weeks left, people. You need to get your draft prep going. You need to do your mocks. It's an exciting time of year. I feel the anxiety deep in the pit of my stomach, somewhere near the duodenum, which is not part of the stomach. But, you know, that's how I'm feeling today. It's Friday. I'm excited to talk about some football in a longer episode with you, James. But how are you doing tonight?
I'm feeling great, Stu. I had my presentation at Sturdy Shelter Brewing last night. I thought it went really well. Thought people had a good time. Got to teach people a little bit more about the joys and, I guess, stresses of fantasy football and how to make the most out of their experiences. I'm also going to be running a fantasy league there at the Sturdy Shelter Brewing. So that's going to be fun, too, to figure that whole thing out. But I am ready to get going here today, ready to talk about what feels like might be the worst division in football. Probably is, right? The AFC South is the worst division in football.
Yes, I would agree that the AFC South is, only because the NFC South is carried by the Buccaneers.
Yep. And, you know, we'll talk about those dumpster fires when we get to those dumpster fires. But let's go ahead and hit a little bit of news before we dive into the dumpster. Last night, we had our first round of post-Hall of Fame game, preseason games. And the Indianapolis Colts have already made their QB situation a little bit worse, if that was even possible. Anthony Richardson failed to pick up a blitzing backer, hit the check down as one does, and got a dislocated pinky last night. Not that I think anyone was going to be drafting Anthony Richardson anyway, just, you know, that was bad, right?
It was bad because it was not good. And I'm sure there was somebody out there that was going to take Anthony Richardson at the very tail end of the draft, banking on rushing upside and electric, you know, play. I don't think it's going to happen. We'll talk about him later, but he absolutely got leveled on that hit. And, I mean, I was watching a little bit of former quarterback, now Hall of Famer, Kurt Warner, break it down and how it was just Richardson's fault. So that's a good one. On the upside, we did have some good preseason games. We had some good preseason performances. You want to keep an eye on some of those rookies, some of those people in the bottom part of depth charts, some of the top performers. Keaton Mitchell, which is a name you might not have heard from Baltimore for about 2 years, he had a good showing. Ashton Jeanty, rookie sensation, had a very poor showing. It was, what, two or three carries for negative 1 yard, so you know, watch some highlights. Don't put too much stock into it because preseason doesn't mean anything at all, but it just means that there is football, James, and we should be excited about that.
If you'd like something football-related to be less excited about, 4 minutes ago, Tom Brady's statue was unveiled in Foxborough, and it is enormous and super ugly, so take
that. Is it
as
ugly as Cristiano Ronaldo's bust? Do you remember that?
Like, yeah, I remember that one. It's not that bad, but, you know.
That's too bad.
Yeah. It is really freaking big, though. Anyway, want to talk Texans?
Yeah, we could talk Texans.
Let's talk Texans.
It's about the only team to talk about, James. Where do you want to start?
I want to start in what is, you know what? I was going to start receivers, but we did have running back news last week dealing with the Texans. So I think it's a good point to jump off since we've already kind of hit it. Joe Mixon, right, dealing with injury, Nick Chubb dealing with oldness, Woody Marks dealing with being young and unknown, and Damian Pierce dealing with being bad. So what's going on there? What are we doing with this, Stu?
Well, I got to be honest, none of these guys should be really, really high on your priority takes. Joe Mixon, of course, is likely to come back and be effective. It's just we have not heard a concrete timeline, exactly what is ailing him. I mean, when it was first reported, it was something that happened over the offseason, a non-football-related injury, and that was months ago. To be frustrating, quote-unquote, at this stage is really, really worrisome to me personally. But like we talked about on our other episode, and you can go back and listen to that too if you want to listen to those episodes again. It's still relevant information. Please listen to it. He still should be drafted at some point. James, you felt you were comfortable with him in the sixth round, and that's totally fine. Definitely, he's not going to be drafted anytime that I'm looking to win my RB2 or my flex spot because taking him and then having that little bit of a hole right there is not attractive to me. James, I'm cool with taking him as a bench spot, but we just do not know when he's going to be back, and I do not think Nick Chubb or Damian Pierce or Woody Marks are going to be in any way super fantasy relevant. I mean, you might get single-digit 6 to 8 points, but that's going to be about as much as you're going to hope for them.
Yeah, and the more I think about Joe Mixon and the more I think about the take I gave on him, I still think it's correct, but I gotta see some kind of progress before the season starts because we can't go into the season with Joe Mixon having a nagging injury that we don't know what's gonna happen with it. There's too many guys behind him knocking on the door trying to get reps, and there's too much potential with him that could go wasted here. And, you know, as a running back, having your feet is kind of important. I've never played running back, but I can only imagine. So I still think right now, being this far away from the start of the season, having that much ability for him to make an early return to the team, I like the odds of that happening, but right now it's just too scary. So I'll adjust my sixth round pick for Mixon to being six round asterisk. Sure. You can sure. Draft him with an asterisk. That's a new rule in fantasy football that we all know about. Anyway, let's go wide receivers. By far the most interesting for this team, and probably the most interesting one of two interesting wide receivers in this division. Nico Collins going as the wide receiver 7 right now. Stewie, we were talking before we started recording about his position this high in the draft. We are seeing him going at the end of the first round recently. Can fall to the second, and I think in a lot of cases will fall when more running backs are taken in the first round. But with Nico Collins, he did produce really well last year when healthy. What did he play, 10 games last year?
12.
It was 12? 12 games is, you know, worrisome. But when he was playing, I think the production he had was impressive. He still got to 1,000 yards. He was still productive, and he still helped people down the stretch in their fantasy teams. But having guys behind him, like Brian Thomas, who we'll talk about with the Jaguars, I'm not certain I want him in the first round. I would love to get him in the second. There's probably still guys beneath that I would rather have. But also looking at the rest of the receivers for the Texans, Christian Kirk, Jaden Higgins, Jalen Noel, John Mechie, and even Tank Dell, who we thought was going to break out last year, it doesn't really look like there's that much quality to feed the ball to from CJ Stroud. So I like him as a player. His injury history frustrates me, and what I think is going to kind of be a frequent thing to say with all of the teams in this division is, I don't know. Stu, what do you think?
You know, I actually really do like where Nico Collins is going at this moment at wide receiver 7. I honestly think he could even be in the top 6. It just depends on how you feel about Malik Nabers and all of his lingering toe and shoulder injuries. I mean, yes, the best ability, as you said earlier, James, is availability, but the efficiency and the playmaking and the high ceiling part of Nico Collins' game is extremely attractive to me. I'm totally down taking him in the first round. I'll just get that out of the way right now. And I think he fits right where he should be. You mentioned Brian Thomas Jr. maybe being someone that you take over top of him, or I really think it's a push between those two guys, and I think they're in very similar situations. But as we'll talk about Brian Thomas Jr. later, he has more quality, I think, competition than the guys that you mentioned. Jaden Higgins, Noel, Tank Dell's missing the whole season. Like, going into last year, the Houston Texans had what looked to be one of the best wide receiver rooms in football. Tank Dell disappointed and then got hurt. Stephon Diggs tore his ACL. I mean, Nico Collins was on and off the field as well, but when he was on, it was there. He's young. He's got what I think is a good quarterback in an offense that is probably going to struggle to do a lot of other things running the ball, especially if Joe Mixon is going to be out here in the first part of the season. They're going to have to look to Nico Collins really early and really often. So I'm perfectly happy where he is right now, and honestly, I might even move him up a spot or two before things are all said and done. So a lot of things to consider. A couple of the guys after him you had mentioned. I do want to highlight Jaden Higgins coming out of Iowa State. He looked really, really good in college. He is a round 2 pick, but he is just outside of round 1. Like, he is a quality talent. He has good draft capital, good pedigree. Caught 90 balls in his last year at Iowa State, over 1,100 yards. People have been very, very excited about him. He's going around, I think you said round 9 or something like that earlier.
I saw him 11 today, round 11.
Round 11, even better. Like, he could very well be one of the more popular dart throws later on in drafts, one with a little bit higher of a possible rate for success. So I'm kind of into that. A very good target there. But James, I've talked forever. Why don't you give us one or two sentences about Dalton Schultz? Because we've talked about all the relevant players in the receiving core, I think.
Well, I'm kind of going to throw maybe a wet towel on your expectations of how long I can talk about Dalton Schultz, because that sentence I just said was probably about it. I'm not very excited about Dalton Schultz. I'm not going to draft him. I'm not going to encourage any of our listeners to draft him. I'm seeing him as a tight end 27 right now. He had his time to be pseudo fantasy relevant. That time is over. I don't know how many sentences was.
That's it. A few sentences, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think I can kind of also blanket hit a couple other positions for the Texans here. Kyahmi Fairbairn is a very consistent kicker. If you want to target him, congratulations on drafting a kicker. The Texans defense, you know, they are ranked as the DST 6 I'm seeing on my side right now. But as always, don't reach on kickers either, but don't reach on defenses. Stream your defenses. And also, don't forget that the value of a defense is often tied to the ability of an offense to stay on the field. And a lot of that is going to depend on our quarterback, who we haven't talked about yet, and that's C.J. Stroud. Last year, a guy who was pegged to be a fantasy darling did not do that. Struggled. You know, he did have to deal with a lot of those problems with the receiving core staying healthy and everyone else around him staying healthy. And he struggled. But, you know, sophomore slumps happen. It's how you respond to that. It's how you come back and improve after that. And I think C.J. Stroud is a pure passer. Has a lot of ability to improve this year. I'm not saying draft him. He's going as the QB19 right now. He's going to be available for streaming later on. He's a guy that I'd like to watch. I'm not expecting him to be phenomenal, but I am expecting him to, at some point in the season, put up some really good games and probably his make his way onto some rosters, maybe even start. I think he's going to outperform his QB19 ranking right now. How far north of that he goes, I don't know, but I'd be willing to put a bet on that. Stu, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he's perfectly fine as somebody if you're wanting to take a chance, you draft two quarterbacks for some reason and you take him at the very end of drafts just to see what you have. Maybe you took like Justin Herbert and you want to take CJ Stroud too, thinking both one of those guys is going to hit, right? I mean, maybe not, but I do think he's better than he was last year just as a player overall. There were a lot of things working against him, including offensive coordinator and play calling. It was anemic, and they ended up firing that coordinator. It was midseason, maybe three quarters of the way through the year. So maybe a little bit of breath of new life into the offense. But the thing about it is that their offensive line is poor. It is just not good. So he's got to stay on his 2 feet for most of the season to even be able to deliver a ball. It's just not something I want to trust. I think he's a good player. I'm probably, for a division rival, a bit of a fan of CJ Stroud's, but I just don't think for this year, 2025 fantasy, he's going to be too much. I wouldn't be shocked if he became a starter for a few games for a lot of teams, but right now, where we are in August of 2025, no, I'm not super interested in him.
All right, beautiful. Let's keep it moving. Let's head on over to Duval. Where do we want to start here? Let's start with the receivers, because again, like the Texans, this is where we've got the most consistent goodness, I guess, and that's with one player, Brian Thomas Jr., who we talked about earlier. Stu, you were a guy who I believe drafted Brian Thomas Jr. last year.
Sure did.
Do I remember you trading him away?
Don't
do that. Okay,
don't.
I won't
bring
go there.
It up, my
I won't
man.
Bring it up. But I kind of like Brian Thomas Jr. better than I like Nico Collins this year. I know you mentioned you disagree, but
it's a push. I could go either way. On record, it's a push.
But I think Trevor Lawrence is a better quarterback than C.J. Stroud, and I think that he showed really good rapport with Brian Thomas as a rookie last year. So I'm really excited to see what year two has for those guys. One thing I think that kind of detracts from Brian Thomas is there is nothing in the rest, and this is going to be controversial, I don't see anything in the rest of the Jaguars receiving core that I think is going to be horrifically attractive for defenses to try and game plan for other than Brian Thomas. And yeah, I'm saying that knowing that Travis Hunter is there. I am very down on Travis Hunter. I do not think that he is going to be fantasy relevant. I see him as wide receiver 33 in PPR, and I think that is grossly overpaying for him. I don't see the ability for a guy to spend time on both sides of the ball and do either one efficiently. And if he does either of them efficiently, it's going to be defense. That's what the Jaguars coaching staff has said, that he is a much better defensive player, or at least a more developed defensive player than he is an offensive player. And that's not to say he's not a good wide receiver. It's just he's not going to be able to build the rapport with Trevor Lawrence like Brian Thomas Jr. is able to. And yeah, Trevor Lawrence has even kind of alluded to this in his comments to the press, saying, like, what do you really want to do here? Do you want to go and maybe break up a ball every once in a while, two or three times a game? Or do you want to come and try to catch touchdown passes from me? And I could see other people getting fed up with this on the team as well. I'm not in on Travis Hunter as his situation here today. I think I've also been consistent with this over the course of the summer when we've talked about him. Really good player. Hate the situation. Stu, what do you think?
I guess Fantasy Football Beer is a certified Travis Hunter hater club, because he has fantasy 2025 fantasy bust written all over him. You're getting him, what is he going in, like the sixth or something like that?
Like, why?
That is too high. That is too high for a guy that I mean, are we going to get – what percentage of offensive snaps is he going to play? Because he's going to have a role on defense. Even if it's 70% offense, 30% defense, that doesn't translate to 70% of snaps on offense. That could be very well lower, like half the snaps out there. Is he going to play something like that? Is he going to be above that? Is he going to be below that? You're absolutely on the money with building a rapport with your quarterback. If you want fantasy goodness, you need to be an asset to your quarterback. You need to be a trusted tool, someone that he looks to and wants to throw the ball to, who knows and trusts that you will be open and in your spot and where you are supposed to be when you are supposed to be there. And if you're taking too much on your plate, not only is it too much on your body, like all these collisions, the teams, I don't know. The Jaguars paid a handsome price to get him in the draft. They are facilitating his dream of playing as a two-way player. For fantasy outside of IDP leagues, I'm not interested. I'm willing to let someone else pick up Travis Hunter and possibly have him explode on them.
Yeah. Go
ahead.
As far as the snap share, what we're expecting to see there, the Jaguars have said they're aiming for 80% there for him. I'm calling BS on that. I don't think that's happening.
That's high.
And if it does happen, how many of those plays is he actually going to be effective for? It's definitely not going to be close to 80%. But
like, is he going to be out there primarily on third downs in wide offensive sets with lots of receivers on the field? It's a whole bunch of nonsense, things that we just don't know, and I don't really want to pick that up on my fantasy team in drafts. Now, let me defend myself a little bit. I drafted Brian Thomas Jr. I got into the hype late in August of last year. I thought that he had the makeup of being a steal in the draft. I traded him. I did. Boo, yes, boo, Stu. He sucks. I traded him after week four game in Houston. He got 6 of 9 for 86 and a touchdown. I was like, this is the breakout. Like, this is it. His value is high right now. For a 10th rounder, let me trade him to shore up something else that's a hole in my lineup. That hole was named Kyle Pitts. I'm not making myself sound really good right here. I traded him for a Kyle Pitts replacement. It didn't work out. He's a great player. He's going to go in the late first, early second round of drafts. Totally fine with that. I don't think you'll be upset with that. Second year wide receiver. Good stuff. Everything's good. So... I'm sorry, Brian Thomas Jr. We could have made history together.
I'm sure he maybe might forgive you.
I doubt it.
Let's go ahead and move on to another position here. I think very similarly to with the Texans, I got nothing to say about their tight ends. Brenton Strange is not going to be on rosters. Unlike the Texans, their kicker and defense are irrelevant. Cam Little should not be on rosters. The Jags will not be rostered. Running backs are interesting, though. And, Stu, I know you also have some recent run-ins with Travis Etienne. Would you like to have a little bit of therapy about him? Would you like to go off, King?
Last year was bad. I took him thinking he was safe. More's the pity for me, I guess. We have a three-headed monster back here. We've got Travis Etienne, only 2 years removed from the RB3. If you really want to be super hopeful and enthusiastic and positive about him, go ahead and take him later in drafts. It's probably not going to be me, even if I did take him in one of our mock draft episodes. Tank Bigsby is probably the guy that I would like to own if I owned anybody in this backfield. But again, three-headed monster. We're not sure how it's all going to shake out. None of them are particularly high ceiling guys. Tank Bigsby will be fine as a bye week fill-in. He'll mostly rot on people's benches all year. Then we have the rookie, Abashiel Tootin. The Toot.
Toot.
Who knows? I've heard good things out of camp. I've heard bad things out of camp. I've heard a lot of things about the Jaguars camp. And again, we just don't know. We're going to have to see it play out, and for that level of uncertainty in drafts is not something that's attractive to me personally.
Yeah, so. I am actively avoiding every part of the Jaguars in drafts except for Brian Thomas Jr. And I think that's all there is to say about it.
Poor Trevor Lawrence, man. He roasted
him.
Okay,
I like Trevor Lawrence as a player. I still think he's trying to hit his potential as a quarterback in the NFL. He has not shown it. But I think a lot of that is, you know, the dumpster fire that is the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think he can get there eventually. Yes. Still, it just might be a lot harder to get there because, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm not taking Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Even though I do think he is a better football player than C.J. Stroud, I think I like C.J. Stroud for fantasy better this year. But it is what it is. And I think it's time for us to move on to another team in the AFC South. We are doing a whole division today because of how mostly fantasy irrelevant it is. And we're going to hit, Stu, our collective favorite team, the Indianapolis Colts. Where would you like to start in Indianapolis today, Stu?
This is going to be some of the hardest content I've ever had to put out on the internet because the Colts are something else. Let's start with Jonathan Taylor. Cool. The best thing about the Colts, the only positive thing about the Colts, 26 years old, he's an RB1 probably through and through. What is he going in standard? Let me look real quick.
In PPR, he's RB11. I see him going in the second round.
I've got him at 10, and honestly, with the way the Colts use him, he could very well jump several slots. He's the only real good thing about the Colts offense, and they will ride him into the dirt. So if you want the opportunity, you want the volume, hopefully it's meaningful volume, of course, as James always says, but Jonathan Taylor is going to be probably a second round target for you. I've never seen him sneak into the first in mocks. It's just whether he gets taken in the early second or later on in the second, but he'll go in the second. Perfectly happy taking him as my RB1 if I went wide receiver early, got someone like Jefferson or CeeDee Lamb. I think Jonathan Taylor pairs really well with them. Not a whole lot to say because it's so good, which is hilarious because I've had barely anything to say about everyone else in this division because they're all bad. So,
yeah.
James, tell me about Jonathan Taylor, and I don't know if you have anything to say about DJ Giddens, Tyler Goodson, or Khalil Herbert, but none of them are fantasy relevant, so you might not have.
Okay, Jonathan Taylor, I agree with basically everything you said. He is going to be fantasy relevant, not just because he's good at football, but mostly because there's nothing else going on around here. I mean, who could even possibly be throwing the ball to take touches away from him? Is it Anthony Richardson? He can't throw to save his life. He'd be taking touches away from Jonathan Taylor on the ground. Daniel Jones can also run, but he also sucks at quarterback. So they're gonna have to run the ball all the time. And in short yardage situations, it's going to be running the ball every time. There might be a read option if Anthony Richardson is in, but Anthony Richardson pretty often can't perform read options well. Daniel Jones is okay at it, but I think they're probably going to rather have the bigger, more athletic guy there. Why do I have to talk about quarterbacks in the running game as a primary option? This sucks, man. This sucks. I hate so much about what the Colts are doing right now. My only hope is that they tank and get anybody. But anyway, I digress. I was supposed to be talking about Jonathan Taylor. He's a very good running back, and I am not bothering to get his handcuffs.
Not at all. If he goes down, the Colts' offense is going to be anemic to the extreme. So
yeah.
You touched on him. Anthony Richardson or Daniel Jones are going to be starting games for the Indianapolis Colts in the year 2025, the year of our Lord. Praise be. Neither of them will be fantasy relevant. It's just, can they support the people around them, the Tyler Warrens, the Josh Downs, the Michael Pittmans? The long answer is probably not, and the short answer is no. Neither of them are exciting options, and you should probably do well in fantasy drafts to be avoiding the Colts altogether.
Yep.
What are those weapons we're avoiding? wide receivers, we've got Michael Pittman Jr., who's, I think, on the depth chart listed first. He's been quite disappointing for the last couple of years. He's dealt with back issues and I think a hamstring issue sometime in there as well. I think I've just tasted bile in the back of my throat. He's not going to get the meaningful volume to be fantasy relevant. I don't even know where he's going in drafts because I just never look at him. It's just bad. Everything is bad. Michael Pittman is the wide receiver 48. Josh Downs, who has gotten a little bit of buzz, people are kind of excited about him, is right there at wide receiver 49-2. And you know what that tells me as a person of this earth? Nobody knows what to do with the Colts wide receivers. They don't know which one's going to be more relevant. They're just there together. And I think the most likely option is that neither of them are going to be super fantasy relevant. James, anything that I missed?
You know, the way that the Colts have built this receiver room, if this group was really anywhere else in the NFL, I think we'd have some things to get excited about. Michael Pittman, when healthy, is a big-bodied possession-style receiver who can bring down tough balls when he's healthy. Josh Downs, an exciting receiver in many different respects, but the way he plays football requires a quarterback who's able to make throws that complement his ability to get open in difficult ways, which none of these guys are going to be able to do. Alec Pierce, exciting downfield threat. So is A.D. Mitchell, except A.D. Mitchell has rocks for hands. There would be something to be excited about if there was a quarterback on this team, and there's just not. The exception, however, is at the tight end position. Tyler Warren has been steadily rising up draft boards, as I kind of figured he would, given the Brock Bowers narrative from last year. A lot of comparisons to be made, just freakish athlete, large body, big frame, and he was really probably the only guy for the Colts last night in their preseason game, other than the kicker, who had a good day. I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to want to spend a lot of capital on him, and I think for a good amount of the season, you may end up being right on that. But the fact is also that the reason he's going to be getting volume is because those quarterbacks aren't going to be able to consistently hit anybody else but a giant target 10 yards or less down the field. And yeah. That feels so gross. I don't even know if he's going to be a viable red zone target because they're going to have to rely on running the ball so much. He should be a fantastic red zone target. I hope he proves not he proves me wrong. I hope the Colts prove me wrong, but I don't see it happening.
No, they won't. Tyler Warren, I'm totally cool with him climbing boards because I do think he's actually a pretty good value right now, but the more he climbs, the less I'm going to take him personally, and the more excited I am that there's just one more higher upside depth piece at running back or wide receiver that I can take advantage of since it wasn't taken to the team that took Warren.
Yep.
Okay, so they have a defense, they have a kicker.
That's all there
That's
is
really
to say.
All we need to say about that. Okay, I just want to say something, James. We're now 34 minutes into this recording. We're through three teams. We're going faster through an entire division than doing half of a division that's actually interesting to talk about.
Yep, our last episode was 47 minutes. We hit two teams. We might beat that when we finish the Titans here. Stay tuned on Fantasy Footbeard to see if we do that. And while you're at it, go ahead and give us a follow on Instagram, X. Listen to us on Spotify, Apple Music, all of the places you hear your podcasts. Send us beer recommendations at fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. Do all those cool things. Stu, you were going to say something and I interrupted you. Go for it.
The only thing I was going to say is let's beat that 47 minutes, shall we? Talking about Tennessee. The Tennessee Titans, the owners of the... They were the first overall pick, right? Cam Ward? Yeah.
Yep, Cam Ward.
Cool. Cam Ward, what a guy. Rookie quarterback, Cam Ward. He's going to take the world by storm. He's going to be amazing. He's probably not. Look, he could be talented. That's great. Take this year and just become a good quarterback. Develop. Hopefully he doesn't get thrown to the wolves too badly that it just stunts his growth like Anthony Richardson. He just doesn't have the weapons around him to be super viable. The team is just not good. There was a reason they were the first overall draft pick. They have a couple bright spots in an overwhelming sea of darkness. Cam Ward's not going to be drafted. He shouldn't be drafted. We'll just watch him in real life, and we'll look forward to 2026 Fantasy James. Anything that I missed about the number one pick in the draft?
No, I have nothing to say about Cam Ward, which I know that's bad podcasting. I should have something to say. I wish him well.
It just doesn't even matter. It just doesn't even matter.
I feel like there's nobody on the Titans worth getting excited about. The only guy on this team that I'm really drafting with any degree of frequency is Tony Pollard, and that's just because he's going to have volume. I don't know if it's going to be meaningful volume, but he, at times during the season last year, did something with it. We've seen him and his ability to, at times, take advantage of those opportunities, but I'm just really depressed when I look at this depth chart. I'll just list as many of these guys as I can here. Tony Pollard is sitting at the RB26. I think that is probably a fair ranking. I'm seeing him going in the 8th. I even think that's a good value. Tyjae Spears going as the RB36. Not interested. Bashaul Tuten, RB55. Not interested. Sorry. Bashaul Tuten is a Jaguar. Sorry.
Yeah, he's going to play for two teams.
Yeah. Sorry, I had my depth chart screwed up there. Calvin Ridley going over to wide receivers is not the same guy he was when he was in Atlanta before he had his big full-year suspension. Wide receiver 32 should probably tell you whereabouts is the drop-off point for viability of drafting wide receivers. Don't be looking for meaningful production after 31. Tyler Lockett, mm-hmm. wide receiver 83. Nothing else to say for any of these guys. Elik Iomanor, I think that's right. Xavier Restrepo, nothing there. And as much as I love to say the name Chigakonkwo, let me say it a few more times. Chigakonkwo. Stu Chigakonkwo.
Chigakonkwo.
Yeah, there's nothing here. There's nothing here that's fantasy relevant. I'm disgusted that this team is in the NFL.
I will take a slightly more positive view. I do agree with Tony Pollard. I think he could be a sneaky value where he is. Bench target, bye week fill in, but they basically overworked him last year because Tyjae Spears was out so much. I don't expect that same workload to be the case this year, but perhaps if he is, you know, not as worked, his efficiency goes up. Perhaps you get a little lightning in the bottle at the what feels like tail end of Tony Pollard's viable fantasy career. Tyjae Spears, if we do see more of them of him, can he stay on the field? That's really the only thing. He'll probably be drafted as a very late bench target as well. In the wide receiver market, people every year fall over themselves to get Calvin Ridley, thinking about how inaccurate Will Levis was trying to hit him on deep routes. I stopped looking for Calvin Ridley to be super fantasy relevant 4 years ago, I think. I mean, he's on the wrong side of 30. He's the number one in this offense, and that's great, but he's got a rookie quarterback. We don't know how this is going to go. He's pretty much the last like wide receiver flex target that I'll look at in drafts, and if I do get him, that means that I missed out on like Tet McMillan, George Pickens, who else is around there? I don't even flip it now, but Calvin Ridley, if you want to take him, sure, he'll probably have like 3 or 4 good games and be relatively decent the rest of the year, but it's not something that's going to win your league there in the 6th or 7th round. Tyler Lockett is a ghost of himself. He haunts his life before he even dies. Chigakonkwo, though, if you want like super deep tight end sleepers, like so deep in sleep that I don't know, you're you're dreaming you're in the dentist's office, or you're dreaming that you're taking a test that you're not prepared for. We're that asleep right now. I think he could very well be a starting tight end or jump into the consistent streamer conversation, because he is huge. He's a big man, and big man equal big target, and big target equal easy to hit with passes. So I think he could very well be reasonably fantasy relevant this year, but nothing that we want to actually be drafting. He'll be on the waiver wires. He'll stay there until he shows us that he's going to do something. And they also have a defense and kicker.
Stu, do you feel like you need to drink now?
I wish I could drink alcohol.
I know you're on your diet, but I still think after that tough slog through four bad teams, I think it's last call.
We need something to wash it down.
Yeah, Stu, what are you washing down this today? With
so yeah, once again I'm going to highlight a couple different breweries in Indianapolis, and I'm going to pick what I think is the coolest name, or what I would definitely try if I walked in there. I have not been to all these breweries. This one is just, it just happens to be really close to home here on the northwest side of Indianapolis. This is Deviate Brewing. These are beers that deviate from the norm. Okay, we are talking about the Marshmallow Cake Crusader, the barrel-aged stout that they used for their countdown to the 10th anniversary party. And that's actually coming up this month, so Indiana friends, Indianapolis friends, maybe Deviate Brewing on Saturday, August 23rd, if you want to go drink some Marshmallow Cake Crusader. This is a marshmallow German chocolate cake imperial stout aged in a bourbon barrel. This is 15.3% ABV, so that is... Whoo! You're feeling that. Just looking around at other people that have drank it, because of course I would try this. This sounds really good to me. I love anything dark. Marshmallow throws me a little bit, but I'm slightly adventurous sometimes. But it's got really, really good ratings on Untappd. I mean, not too many ratings, but around 4.7% out of 5. 4.7 out of 5, excuse me. So it pours nice and dark, very thin head. It looks quite tasty, and the comments are pretty overwhelmingly positive for it. So if I were in a drinking mood, I would try that from Deviate Brewing. But James, I want to know what you are drinking tonight.
Tonight, Stu, I'm drinking a beer that I know you like, and I didn't get it because I know you liked it. I got it because... while I was doing my Cicerone training, I learned a really cool story about this style of beer, and I really wanted to share it. So today, I'm drinking from North Coast Brewing Company, the Old Rasputin Russian Imperial Stout from North Coast in Fort Bragg, California. So, kind of a classic in the darker beer, craft beer scene. But... what I learned about the Russian Imperial Stout style of beer. Stu, if I told you the name of that style, where would you think that it was brewed?
Okay, go ahead, hit me.
So you would think a Russian Imperial Stout would be brewed in Russia, right?
I mean, that would make a little too much sense, yeah.
It's not. So the Russian Imperial Stout does not come from Russia. It actually comes from Ireland. So the reason for that, in the 1700s, the court of Catherine the Great was really interested in this style of beer. It was something that you couldn't get in Russia or in other parts of Europe. Catherine the Great really liked Irish stouts. And so she requested for her court that Irish brewers would brew some for her and send them to her. So they did. She loved them. One problem, Russians like stronger drinks, and Irish stouts are among the lighter in alcohol content. So they created different levels of the stout. The export stout, which is slightly higher ABV than the Irish stout. The extra export stout, which is higher than that. And then the Russian Imperial export stout, which is... this guy. And that's usually your over 10% ABV. This guy's 9%, but I thought that story was really cool, and that's why I picked it today. So
absolutely.
Here we go. Let's crack these bad boys in 3, 2, 1. I'm in a bottle today. Nice,
fancy.
Nice sound effects there, Stu.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And, Stu, go ahead and give us your last words for the evening.
You know, I'm just glad to learn a little something new about Catherine the Great. I know now that she liked Irish stouts, and she liked horses, if you get my meaning behind that, James. I'm happy we're past the AFC South. We only have one more Southern division left to go. We'll probably hit that. I don't know if we're going to double up on that here in the next week or so, but, you know, look forward to that. We're going to get all the divisions out before the end of the off season. Maybe we'll get a mock draft in there, one more just for the road, because I flippin' love mock drafting. Don't forget to do yours. Get your rankings together. Look at things. We're in crunch time right now. We're only 3 weeks out, and we're ready to dominate. So, James, I'm ready for you to take us home.
All right. Stu, thank you for a great episode today. Thank you for a great week. We recorded two this week. Thank you for being my friend, buddy. Just
well,
want to say
you.
That.
You're so nice.
Thank you to Indy the dog, who seems to have made himself a recurring character in this podcast. He was barking at the pizza guy earlier, and immediately after that, he decided to come into my lap and try to lick the microphone. So that might have made it onto the show. But thank you, listeners, for listening to our show today. Whether this is your first or your manyth listen to the Fantasy Foot Beer podcast, thank you. We appreciate you. And for all of us here at Fantasy Foot Beer, for Dr. Michael Stewart, for Indy the dog, I'm James Kemp. Good night. Good talk.